Here's a puzzle. The man who gave us capitalism's invisible hand spent far more time writing about morality than markets. Adam Smith is remembered for explaining how self-interest drives prosperity, yet his first and favorite book wasn't about wealth. It was about becoming a better person. The theory of moral sentiments sat largely unread for two centuries, while the wealth of nations shaped the modern world. But something curious has happened lately. Tech billionaires cited as life-changing. Philosophers are rediscovering its insights. Because buried in Smith's 18th century prose lies something we desperately need: a practical guide to living well that doesn't require religion, doesn't demand perfection, and actually works. The question isn't whether Smith's ideas are relevant, it's why we forgot them in the first place. We all hesitate before acting badly, before sending that angry email or taking undeserved credit. Something stops us. Not fear or guilt, but what Smith called the impartial spectator, an imagined observer judging whether we're being reasonable. When you dominate conversations, it whispers, "You're being tedious." This inner voice emerges from social interaction, internalizing what others approve and condemn. Its brilliance lies in practicality. You don't need sacred texts, just imagine how a reasonable person would view your behavior. Yet self-deception remains the source of half the disorders of human life. We spot physical flaws easily, but moral failings? We drape those in a mysterious veil. Physicist Richard Feynman nailed it. You are the easiest person to fool. We disguise selfishness as virtue. Joan Baez skipped her brother-in-law's funeral for her tour, claiming it honored his memory. We say, "I'll let you go," when ending calls we want to escape. This extends to confirmation bias, selectively connecting dots that confirm our self-image while forgetting contradictions. True wisdom begins with recognizing that, yes, you are indeed the easiest person to fool. Smith distills human contentment into 12 words. Man naturally desires not only to be loved, but to be lovely. We crave admiration, but must deserve it through genuine virtue. Peter Buffett sold $90,000 of Berkshire Hathaway stock, eventually worth $100 million, to pursue music, choosing being lovely over merely being loved. The disconnect between reputation and reality creates profound misery. Bernie Madoff's accolades rang hollow. Lance Armstrong's victories crumbled with his lies. Beloved celebrities like Whitney Houston, Robin Williams, and Anthony Bourdain suffered such emptiness. Fame without genuine virtue creates a void no attention can fill. Yet we relentlessly pursue wealth and status. NFL coaches sacrifice family time. Presidential candidates spend years away from loved ones. Your friend keeps promising to quit after just one more bonus, yet never does. This echoes King Pyrrhus planning to conquer the world before relaxing. When his advisor asks why not relax now, the king has no answer. Smith recognized that fame becomes a terrible drug. Once experienced, all other pleasures pale. Aging rock stars tour to smaller crowds, athletes play past their prime. Smith warns that ambition is a poison to be avoided because once you get on that treadmill, there is no rest. The alternative? Stay humble, do what you love, do what you respect, and be content if that feeds your family. True contentment comes when inner character matches outer reputation. Smith observes a curious paradox. We struggle with others' minor inconveniences, yet connect deeply with major tragedies. There's even a malice in mankind that finds small troubles amusing, explaining why people hide annoyances or transform them into self-deprecating humor. While fictional tragedies move us, real suffering evokes stronger responses, especially involving loved ones. Yet we sympathize more readily with joy than grief. At weddings, our happiness is genuine. At funerals, our sorrow amounts to no more than an affected gravity. When friends share afflictions, we listen attentively but can't match their emotions, creating artificial sympathy that vanishes once we leave. This explains why the rich and famous receive more attention. We enjoy others' successes more readily than we feel their failures, which is why we make parade of our riches and conceal our poverty. Propriety forms the foundation of social harmony. We instinctively adjust emotional expressions based on context, sharing more with close friends than acquaintances, more with family than colleagues. This calibration isn't mere politeness, it's the glue holding communities together. Smith identifies three core virtues: prudence, justice, and beneficence. Or in modern terms, take care of yourself, don't hurt others, be good to others. Prudence encompasses comprehensive self-care, managing health, finances, and reputation. The prudent person is sincere yet reserved, chooses friends based on character rather than status, and avoids excessive socializing. They sacrifice immediate gratification for future well-being and study seriously and earnestly to understand whatever they profess to understand. They follow say little, do much. Justice primarily means not harming others, a negative virtue of restraint. Don't steal, murder, lie, cheat, or hurt feelings. In the race for wealth and honors, we may compete vigorously, but jostling or throwing down competitors violates fair play. Unlike other virtues, justice has clear, precise rules. Beneficence, actively doing good, involves loose, vague, and indeterminate guidelines. Smith compares justice to grammar rules, precise and teachable, while beneficence resembles principles of excellent writing, recognizable but difficult to codify. His tribute to David Hume reveals his ideal: perfectly balanced temperament, prudent frugality never preventing charity, wit that was never malicious. Beyond personal virtue, Smith offers insights into improving society collectively. There's no single best way to make the world better. Your unique gifts, passions, and opportunities determine your potential impact. Even being an extraordinary parent, neighbor, or employee profoundly affects others' lives. We mistakenly separate work as selfish while viewing volunteer work as our societal contribution. But being excellent at our jobs, whether teaching, managing, or serving customers, helps others flourish. Smith points to something subtle we can all do: participate mindfully in emergent order. Consider language. Who decided Google would become a verb? Not Google's management. Yet we collectively decided through countless individual choices. Adam Vergeson called these phenomena the result of human action, but not of human design. Smith applies this to morality itself. We are vicegerents, deputies who collectively maintain social order through our reactions to others' behavior. Our desire for approval and our conscience create civilized society without legislation. Each of us plays two crucial roles: being lovely even when we could get away with not being so, and honoring the honorable while dishonoring the dishonorable. Every virtuous action ripples outward. Refusing to gossip or declining to laugh at cruel jokes strengthens social fabric. Smith's seemingly contradictory works reveal a profound truth: we inhabit two spheres simultaneously. Our ancestors lived in small groups with limited trust. Modern specialization created unprecedented prosperity. Even a simple pencil requires millions of strangers cooperating unknowingly. The theory of moral sentiments examines personal relationships. The wealth of nations explores impersonal exchange. These aren't contradictions, but complementary perspectives. We begin life in what economist Walter Williams calls a socialist paradise, the family, where goods flow freely from love. As adults, we enter commercial life, where cooperation stems from profit and competition. Nothing prepares us for this jarring transition. Smith warned that wealth could corrode our souls, yet he couldn't foresee how specialization would create not just prosperity, but unprecedented human creativity, lifting billions from poverty while providing meaningful work, better health, and global connectivity. Smith's dual perspective offers wisdom: cultivate prudence, justice, and beneficence in personal relationships. Embrace productive self-interest in economic interactions. Love locally, trade globally. The path to contentment isn't choosing between self-interest and virtue. It's understanding where each belongs. As the Talmud asks, who is rich? He who is happy with his lot.